Lobbying politicians in Ontario.
The fact that candidates, MPPs, will be hearing from regular people about these concerns makes it easier for other people like ARPA staff when they want to raise something as needing legislative action. It won't come as news to the MPP that this is a concern to people.
ARPA's out with a guide to the Ontario election. They're not telling you who to vote for. Instead, they're providing information so you can raise issues during the campaign. In the news, We Need a Law is about to launch a cross-country summer billboard campaign, pushing back against efforts to expand the availability of RU486, and some new research into Canadian attitudes about marriage.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
ARPA's pro-life arm, We Need a Law, is getting set to launch a cross-country billboard campaign on the issue of abortion legislation. Director Mike Schutten says this is part of a larger strategy to get information out in advance of a legislative effort that could start this fall.
We've been working for about a year and a half now on promoting our draft international standards law. And as we're doing that, the number one response we get from whether it's everyday Canadians, legislators, staff members in Ottawa, etc., is really, Canada has no laws whatsoever? That's by far the number one response. And polls show that 80% of Canadians think we have legislation in place. So we thought, you know what, as we set the groundwork in place for the introduction of this international standards bill in one form or another, we want to ensure that Canadians have it in their minds that Canada has no abortion laws. So we've created a very simple design. It says Canada has no abortion laws. And then right underneath it just says, we need a law.ca. Huge letters, white billboard with black letters, very simple. So we're rolling this campaign out. Hopefully you're going to be raising some money over the course of the next month to support it, and then running it through the month of August. And the idea there is that we're going to catch a ton of traffic as people are on vacation, traveling around, etc., out and about.
The campaign will also feature bus shelter ads. Schutten says they're working with the Pattison Group to get a national discounted rate for the billboards, but the idea is to have local ARPA chapters buy into the campaign with donations specific to billboards in their area.
So they would come on board via financial support, but obviously they could then promote that to their membership and say, look, we've sponsored these billboards in this area. But we want to get the national campaign because we get a much better rate, upwards of a 20% discount if we do it that way.
Also from We Need a Law, some solid argumentation against the expanded availability of RU486, the so-called morning-after abortion pill. Pro-abortion groups are engaging in a push to make the pill more readily available in provinces with large rural populations like Manitoba and Newfoundland. We Need a Law researcher Anna Niedhaus sees a real problem with that.
For some reason, abortion seems to continue to be the one medical service that the taxpayers fund, but has no restrictions the way other medications do. So they want women to be able to basically call in, talk to someone on the phone, and then get a prescription that way, or maybe have a Skype video conference. So they don't, if they are in a remote area, they don't actually have to access a doctor or an ultrasound. But that doesn't take into account the fact that an ultrasound will tell if they're too far along and they take the pill. It could cause real complications. They could hemorrhage, they could have all these issues, and they aren't going to be able to access medical services then because they're in a remote area. So they're really targeting the most vulnerable women for the pill. Those are the women who are also going to face the biggest complications if they have an issue in getting access to follow-up care.
Niedhaus says the lobbying effort from the pro-choice movement is actually inconsistent with some of their other statements.
And this real idea that women don't want to go to their doctor. They don't want anyone to know that they're doing this. So at the same time as they're pushing for abortion to be really, really common and get rid of the stigma around it, they recognize that women don't want this to be a public thing. They want to do it as conveniently and quietly as possible. One organization actually used the quote that they trust women to handle abortion themselves. So while they are saying that pro-life groups are advocating for restrictions that are going to end up in women resorting to back alley abortions, in fact, they are actually advocating for back alley abortions where it's done quickly and quietly and secretly.
You could read Anna's full thoughts on this on a blog post that's up on the We Need a Law homepage. And finally, a new survey on Canadian attitudes about marriage. The Angus Reid Institute poll of more than 1,500 Canadians shows more than half of them don't think it's necessary for couples to tie the knot if they want to spend the rest of their lives together. In fact, one in six participants said they're not interested in marriage at all. Peter John Mitchell at the Cardiff Institute says this trend is worrisome.
Canadians seem largely unaware of the important differences between marriage and cohabitation, particularly pertaining to things like relationship stability and that impact on adults and the outcomes for children. And really, the overall Canadian attitude seems to be one of ambivalence towards marriage.
Cardis has done research showing that there are demonstrable benefits that come with marriage, including improved health, economic prospects, and better outcomes for children. But Mitchell says the survey shows that so-called traditional values are losing steam in mainstream society, and that's not a good thing.
Marriage flourishes, and the marriage culture flourishes when that value is transmitted culturally. We are certainly seeing a decline in social institutions that talk about the value of marriage and what it means, not only to the individuals that are involved in marriage, but also to the larger community and to the larger society. Certainly the church has a big role and has been a significant factor in talking about what marriage is and why it matters and being a place where marriage is modeled. I think as churches have lost a little bit of their impact on society, I think that has played a part in a little bit of loss of understanding what marriage is and why it's so important to society.
He says in a way the survey results aren't surprising when you look at it in the broader context of how Canadians are actually living their lives.
It used to be the foundation of a life starting out together. So a couple would often, after schooling or whatever, would marry, then they would perhaps buy a home, then have children. Now we're seeing that it's no longer the foundation. We're seeing that marriage is more of a capstone. That people are partnering, perhaps they're trying to get their careers underway and feel a certain amount of financial stability, perhaps even buy property together, that sort of thing, if they can afford it these days. And then maybe, if they feel they have all the pieces in place, then get married.
That's led to a reality that the age of first marriage continues to go up, about 29 for women, early 30s for most men. Back with more after this.
The Alberta government is attempting to pass bubble zone legislation, which seeks to make it illegal to bring pro-life messaging within at least a 50-meter radius of any abortion clinics in the province. So far, only 114 easy mails have been sent to Alberta MLAs on this issue. We're challenging Alberta to reach 500 easy mails sent to send a clear message to our government. Go to arpacanada.ca/bill9 for more.
And we're back on the program. Ontario voters go to the polls on June 7th. That's a little over a week from now. The three party leaders, incumbent Premier Kathleen Wynne, the NDP's Andrea Horvath, and the Conservatives' Doug Ford, have been touring the province getting their messages out to voters. And ARPA has also weighed in on this election. The organization's posted what it's calling the Ontario Election Report. It's a seven-page document that outlines all the major parties' stated issues and provides a list of resources for voters to continue their own research on the various issues that are out there. The report was written by staff lawyer John Sikkema, and I've got him on the line to talk about it. First of all, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
The first thing that strikes me about the report is that it doesn't make any recommendations on who people should vote for. Is this because of ARPA's commitment to remain nonpartisan? I mean, in the context of an election campaign, with all the rhetoric that involves, it must have been hard for you not to show some colors as you put this thing together.
Well, it is in part because we're nonpartisan. Perhaps it's also in part because on the issues that we listed, the parties, if they have, you know, an intelligible position, it's not necessarily good. So we're dealing with things like gender ideology and education reform and so on. So on some of these things, certainly the Progressive Conservative Party has come out and said that they're looking to make some reforms on things such as education. They may also have candidates that are more open, more receptive on some of these issues. So certainly I think people are able to figure out which candidates and which parties are more open to discussing these things. But these issues are not major platform priorities for any of the parties. That's why I think it's important for us to keep them alive and to discuss them with candidates that are open to that.
You know, there's seven issues that are outlined. I'll just run through them very quickly, and we don't need to get into each one, but it kind of illustrates what you were saying. I mean, protecting families from gender ideology, education reform, parental consent on the abortion piece, ending censorship of pro-lifers, in other words, the bubble zone law, protecting freedom of conscience for healthcare providers, assisted suicide, and a policy on drugs. Most of the commentary on those issues goes to the history of how we got where we are today rather than getting into any recommendations on how to vote, right?
That's right.
Let's take a couple of them as an example of how we would treat these things sort of broadly. Gender ideology is one, and let's grab the bubble zone as another. How are people to consider these issues in the context of a campaign?
I think in every individual race, I mean, the candidates for the parties are selected now. So voting for the candidate who is, I think, best on some of these issues and seeing how receptive they are, if that's possible. I mean, if it's a busy time, you may not be able to get any kind of contact with a candidate between now and the election. But really, this action report is seeing the election as really just the start of kind of taking action in Ontario. So when it comes to item one, protecting families from gender ideology, it may mean forming relationships with your sitting MPP and raising this as an issue. Maybe you're a family who provides foster care or is looking to adopt, something like that, and you're thinking the Children's Aid Society may give you grief if you don't hold, you know, kind of progressive views on issues like sexual identity or sexual morality, and working with your MPP to say, how can we protect families who have the best interests of these children in mind but don't hold the right views. And so that's why we kind of review where the law has gone in recent years. I think a lot of people would be surprised at just how rapidly the law has been moving in the direction of kind of progressive gender ideology in just the last 5 years. And I think there will be some candidates, future MPPs, who are receptive to parents' concerns about state overreach in this case.
And what about the bubble zone thing? That was the other one.
One of the issues there, of course, is the Progressive Conservative Party as opposition did not oppose that bill. So expecting to get that repealed may not be terribly realistic, but there may be some individuals who understand that the law sets a dangerous precedent in terms of really targeting one side of a debate, and also that it's quite broad. It seems to overreach in some ways. And so discussing, again, with if there are candidates or MPPs of integrity, discussing with them how that might be tailored in a more reasonable way.
This 7-page report is broken down into 3 parts. The first sort of outlines the various issues. The last part has a more resources piece pointing to various web links where people can do more research. But part 2 is the one that is of interest to me, and that's entitled Take Action. In the context of an election campaign, the thing that comes to mind for most people when they think of taking action is to vote. But you're recommending a lot more than just voting, right?
That's right. So ordinarily, if we were talking months earlier from now, we'd be saying, get involved in the primary process as well, because often one of the best things you can do, and kind of your vote gets maximized if you're a member of a party and you're involved in choosing the candidate, because often only a few hundred votes can decide that. Obviously, all the candidates are ready to go, and voting now at this stage is just the first step to taking action. And the action that follows that is communicating with MPPs about these issues. So we have ways to inform candidates about the issue, encouraging them to explain why it's important to you, and then asking for something, like asking for a commitment to amend a certain law to ensure that families are protected, that parents' authority is respected in education, for example, and just trying to make asks either through an email or if you get a chance to meet with someone to set up your position reasonably and say, this is a concern, put it on their mind. And the fact that candidates, MPPs, will be hearing from regular people about these concerns makes it easier for other people like ARPA staff when they want to raise something as needing legislative action. It won't come as news to the MPP that this is a concern to people.
We're just about out of time, but I got to ask, any predictions on how this is going to turn out?
Well, you know, I would be more inclined to trust pollsters on that. My gut going into this was that the Progressive Conservatives would take it. People would, whatever issues they may have with Doug Ford, they would put aside because we need a change in government. I still think that's the case, but I guess we'll see.
John, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And just a quick programming note to close. We're heading into the summer schedule for Lighthouse News. The next program due to be posted June 19th. Then one more on the 26th. And then we'll be taking the months of July and August off. Thanks for listening.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.